From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today we have our weekly conversation with BlackAgendaReport.com's Margaret Kimberly. Margaret, welcome back. Pleasure as always.
Thank you, Don.
So this week we're looking at the human rights industry protects imperialism, and we're talking like Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, etc.
Yes, we are. These organizations are respected, although they should not be. They have a lot of credibility. They should not have it. But they weigh in on the side of the United States and its partners whenever there is a regime change plot afoot. And in the past week, both Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch have weighed in on Syria again. Amnesty International released a report which alleged that there was there were mass executions taking place at a Syrian prison. And a few days later, Human Rights Watch chimed in with the claim of chlorine gas attacks in Aleppo, and that the Syrian army was responsible. Now, both reports are pretty skimpy on any evidence. The report on jails relied on anonymous people, most of whom are in Syria, in Turkey. And it's not unusual. People, generally a whistleblower, would not give their full name. But it was reminiscent of all the other efforts to get public support for regime change. So there was satellite photos of this prison. It reminded me of Colin Powell at the UN making the case for the invasion of Iraq. And it was very scanty. People said they would hear a gurgling noise and thought someone was being hanged. Well, you know, that's not evidence at all. There are Syrian dissidents, people who are anti-Assad, who for various reasons said the report lacked in credibility. And as far as Human Rights Watch in Aleppo, the civilians fleeing from the jihadists who were in the pay of the United States and its allies were running towards the Syrian army for protection. So for various reasons, these reports are quite dubious, but the overarching point is that they give cover to the United States when it wants to practice regime change and join in the chorus of calling the target leader a tyrant and echoing U.S. positions.
You know, one should expect this. There is this revolving door between Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and the U.S. State Department, for example, Suzanne Nosel. Now, Suzanne Nosel ends up as Deputy Assistant Secretary of State in 2009. She gets appointed there by Obama. While she's there in 2010 and 2011, for example, she worked at the U.N. Human Rights Council to get resolutions on Iran, Syria, Libya, and Cote d'Ivoire. And she was guiding that stuff through the Human Rights Council at the UN while war was being made on Libya and Syria and the coup in Cote d'Ivoire, you know, the French takeover of Cote d'Ivoire, basically, and the attempted war against Iran. And then she leaves there and ends up at Amnesty International as executive director, Amnesty International USA. And she has also been the COO of Human Rights Watch.
Yes, it is. So it's pretty clear they are not a neutral voice. But most people don't know that. And, you know, every time the United States has to engages in some sort of intervention around the world, you're forced to play catch-up. And at least I feel that way. And suddenly learn more than I already knew about a place. But most people don't even do that. And they just hear Amnesty International or Human Rights Watch and say, oh, this must be true.
A lot of them write a check, too, thinking they're doing human rights work.
Yes, they do. So it's a gift that keeps on giving. These are not independent organizations. They're, you know, funded by Soros, and they are part of the, they're really part of the neoliberal establishment. And so it needs to be pointed out whenever they make these claims, who they are, who they support. They never condemn, what happens after the U.S. intervenes somewhere. They joined in the chorus against Gaddafi. So Libya was destroyed because of the U.S. and NATO and the Gulf monarchs, and people suffered terribly during that time. It was the same thing. The U.S. Backing jihadists to destroy a secular Arab government. And Libya was torn apart. Their darker-skinned and African migrants in Libya were particular targets.
They strung them and up. They actually hung them.
Yes. And destroyed the city of Tawerga, just destroyed it, mostly African town. So, but they're silent when that happens. They're silent about the head choppers in Syria. I mean, where have the human rights abuses taken place? They've taken place with the worst with the people that the U.S. is backing. But they never say anything about that. They never say anything about human rights violations in this country, the world's biggest prison state, a place where police are free to kill an average of three people every single day. They never turn their attentions here. So it's clear whose side they are on. And it's not on the side of peace, and it's not on the side of humanity.
Yeah, you mentioned that they, you know, line up with neoliberals on certain issues, but there was also a direct tie. I'm going to again use Suzanne Nosel as she's like a poster child for this phenomenon. Before she was appointed by the Obama administration, essentially by Hillary Clinton, I'm assuming, because she was head of the State Department at the time, she worked for Richard Holbrooke. You know, famous neocon, and she had, you know, a long career. And one of the things we can thank her for, by the way, also, that was for bringing the world's attention to Pussy Riot.
The protesters in Russia who are held up as a proof of supposed proof of human rights abuses in Russia.
Yeah, both of them.
who spent, I believe, a year in jail, and now they're free to travel around the world and make a lot of money. So that's what they do. They are instruments of the U.S. in its efforts to try to control as much of the world as possible and to get public buy-in for doing it. So in the case of Pussy Riot, for example, they were part of this ongoing effort to demonize Vladimir Putin so that when people hear the words Russia or Putin, they automatically assume the worst. So anything can be said about Putin. Now it's the Democrats are at it again with their stories of hacking and influence in the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. That's another story. But they play that role of backing up the United States government. And it keeps people from thinking that the United States is at fault. And unfortunately, I think most Americans want to believe their government is good, and liberals are no different in that regard. They are actually as bad as conservatives. So they want to believe these organizations are speaking the truth about people somewhere else in the world. And it helps people to believe that the United States is good and right and has noble intentions when, in fact, the opposite is true. So they will create, cause celeb with the Pussy Riot or anybody, or push stories of poison gas attacks when Obama was threatening military action against Syria in 2013. It was a gas attack story, which allegedly took place the day that UN inspectors showed up. So we were to believe that the day UN inspectors showed up, the Assad government would use gas against civilians on the very same day.
Good idea.
And so this is what we're seeing. It's a repeat performance, and it's happening now because there are peace talks going on in Kazakhstan. Russia, Iran, and Turkey. And Turkey has switched sides. They were anti-Assad, and who knows with President Erdogan. He's a wily guy. But for now, they're now on the side of Russia has talked them into being on their side. So the U.S. has lost in Syria, lost on the ground, but they don't want to admit defeat. And the war party is still devoted to this neoliberal idea. So when these peace talks begin between the Syrian government and the opposition, it's important for them to discredit the whole process. So magically, suddenly, these reports appear from Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch to discredit the process and keep up the agitation against Assad and keep up support for regime change and support for the idea that it's a good thing for the U.S. to intervene around the world.
You know, because we brought up Pussy Riot, people aren't aware of it, and if they read the Wikipedia piece, they won't become aware of it, and if they dig around Amnesty, they won't become aware of it. But, you know, people listened to them and their political views, the same way that, you know, the U.S. media, for example, would go down and interview whoever the lead singer was in some band, you know, at CBGB's or something, okay? And, you know, they were just, you know, some semi-musicians growling into a microphone on Thursday nights at open mic night or whatever. So they go into a cathedral in Moscow, drop their drawers, play with themselves, and make duty. Okay, and they get charged with hooliganism. That is political speech that needs to be protected. Try that at St. Patrick's Cathedral. You want to meet me at St. Patrick's Cathedral tomorrow and try that? Tell me how long we spend in Rikers before we even saw a lawyer. So that's what that is. But more to the point, again, we're going to Suzanne Nosel because she's in the thick of this stuff with Syria, and we're talking about the Syrian report. You know, she brings the whole issue of human rights violations to the United Nations while they're working at the Security Council to get no-fly zones and authority to kill Libya. This is after successfully returning the French to colonial control of Ivory Coast because they did such a great job last time in terms of human rights. And And as the thing unfolds in Libya and Syria, and thankfully Russia and China blocked the resolutions that would have had Syria become what Libya is, and she's steering this public relations campaign on human rights at the UN, which turned out to be complete fabrication, and then ends up rewarded for that as the head of Amnesty International USA for the year 2012 into 2013. This is the same entity essentially that's producing this report. That's its lineage.
Well, yeah. So yes. So we have these supposedly independent organizations, which are anything but. And I believe she's not the only person.
Not at all.
To go from the State Department to Human Rights Watch or Amnesty International. So they're arms of the U.S. government. But they, you know, they're well-funded organizations. They have quite an apparatus. And most people are not aware of the role that they actually play. And so here we are at the end game in Syria, or close to the end, where the Syrian government thanks to the Russians finally joining their allies. And by the way, the Russians are the ones following international law in Syria, with the government having the right to ask for their help. So they capture Aleppo, they continue to make gains, there are peace talks, so these reports magically appear in order to discredit this whole process, which could end the suffering of the Syrian people, which, by the way, was caused by the United States. If anybody wants to talk about human rights in Syria, we need to talk about how human rights were violated by the United States deciding that it was going to change the government. And I think we need to just say over and over again, the United States does not have the right to decide who runs Syria or who runs Libya or who runs Ukraine. All of these interventions end in humanitarian catastrophe. Syria has 9 million refugees internally and are now around the world. And they wouldn't be refugees if the United States hadn't chosen to overthrow their government. And the effort has failed, but they will not let go. They're like a pit bull that won't let go of something. It failed. But the people in the war party don't want to admit failure. Trump, it's interesting, said during his campaign that he would not do regime change and the U.S. should not be involved in Syria. But it's hard to know what he will do. There are so many forces in place in the Republican and Democratic parties who are trying to thwart that. Assuming that's what he is intent on doing, he's erratic, and now with things like his national security advisor being forced to resign for what I think are dubious reasons, it's unclear where he's going to go, because he's under pressure not to change from Democrats and from Republicans, who, when it comes to being the war party, become one. So that's why it's important to expose all of these efforts that are used to continue the U.S. effort to have hegemony over most of the world, which is what they want.
And just so Suzanne Nosel doesn't feel singled out, by the way, there was a letter written in May of 2014 by Nobel Prize, Peace Prize winners Adolfo Perez Esquivel and May Reed Maguire, who I've actually interviewed, May Reed Maguire, when she was in jail with Cynthia McKinney on one of the Gaza flotillas, and UN Special Rapporteur on Human Rights in the Palestinian Territories, Richard Falk, who's come under so much fire, over the years for, standing up some. They detail some of them. For example, there's Tom Malinowski. Okay, he was HRW's Washington Advocacy Director. He served as a special assistant to Bill Clinton, and dig this, for human rights, a speechwriter to Secretary of State Madeleine Albright. Do you think he wrote that little ditty about, 400,000 dead Iraqi kids is worth it? When he left in 2013, he left HRW and ended up as an assistant Secretary of State for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor under Kerry. That's one guy. Then you've got HRW USA's advisory committee. It has Miles Frache, who's a former U.S. ambassador to Colombia, that bastion of democracy, and that's before the peace agreement. You've got HRW condemning Venezuela and trying to criticize their candidacy for the UN Human Rights Council, which right now is headed by Saudi Arabia, saying that Venezuela falls short of the acceptable standards for membership and has lost its ability to serve as a credible voice on human rights. They didn't raise those objections about Saudi Arabia, by the way. This is another Human Rights Watch official. That's only two more. And there are dozens of them. They go in and out of the State Department, the CIA, or whatever, into Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch. So what you're detailing here, how could it be otherwise?
Sure. I mean, they're an arm of the government. And instead of being seen as a voice of credibility, they should raise suspicions. Whenever they speak, they raise my suspicions whenever
for sure.
They speak. I thought it was interesting at this juncture that within, and it's so obvious, one day Amnesty International releases its report, and then several days later, it's Human Rights Watch and the chlorine gas. So they work in concert with one another. And I think that the important thing to see is that regime change is going to be continue to be policy in the United States. It would be, assuming that Trump is really serious about getting rid of it, it would be hard for him to do because he is being opposed. So it's clear that this is, for the foreseeable future, this is going to be American policy. And it will be a policy to try to thwart any victory. So rather than give up and walk away from Syria, they are standing until the end and trying to subvert any effort for that government to bring peace to its nation and kick out these terrorists. And I think it's pretty obvious. There's not even any attempt to be even-handed. There is no... I'm not familiar with any Human Rights Watch or Amnesty International reports on the terrorists that took over half of Syria. Interviewing people fleeing Aleppo who were free from ISIS. And people talk very openly about how they suffered under the rule of these jihadist groups. But they never say anything about that, never. They never talk about what the United States does. They never talk about within the United States. They never talk about the impact of these interventions and how people suffer. It's always about the chosen tyrant that they want to tyrant in quotes. I mean to say that the U.S. Wants to dislodge and why they're so terrible and why you shouldn't worry your pretty little head about the United States killing people in some part of the world. And, you know, it's particularly insidious because we're always told that someone is so terrible that people don't mind their country being attacked. People hate Assad so much they don't care their country's in a war or that people have been driven from their home.
Or that you blew up their house or whatever. We don't care about that. We got rid of Assad.
I mean, you know, I don't dislike my government so much that I would be happy about someone making me homeless or turning me into a refugee. But that's what they do. And it's easy for people who are not that serious politically anyway to just turn off and say, well, I've been assured by the right organizations that that this is a good thing, and I don't have to protest or oppose my government because all's right with the world because Amnesty International said so.
Yeah, and you mentioned in the article, you know, not for nothing, they themselves have a very heavy hand in such things as what happened in Iraq with the, you know, back in 1991, that, as you put it, the fable of, you know, the babies being killed in incubators and all of that. They were propagating that stuff. That was, you know, the causes bellus for the invasion, and certainly the political, emotional, political motivator out of the propaganda being presented. And, you know, it turned out to be not true. You know, a whole bunch of people died. They've been continuing to die for, you know, 26 years now. And not even, I guess, you know, being part of the revolving door means never having to say you're sorry.
Yes, yes, and they're never called on it. They just go from crisis to crisis and repeat what the government says, and they never say, you know, back in 1991 we were told this or that, and but we found that that was not true. I remember when the U.S. The second war on Iraq in 2003, we were told that there were 300,000 mass graves discovered in Iraq. It turned out to be like 3,000. And there was no large-scale backtracking on the part of any of these groups who helped to make the case for U.S. aggression. And they just hope that nobody pays attention and nobody calls them on it so they can join in the chorus about babies and incubators and never once acknowledge that it was debunked. And so they just go on and on and on, and the revolving door goes on, and presidents come and go, but they can be reliably counted on as the voice for imperialism.
And then meanwhile, there's all this like heart-wrenching bulk emails that come out for fundraising, and they'll dust off like Joan Baez or somebody else, you know, and you say, oh, gee, isn't her husband still in prison on a hunger strike, like, you know, from when she was singing Joe Hill back at Woodstock or whatever. And now, what happened in Iraq yesterday? What was Amnesty's role and HRW's role in that? And how do you feel about that, Joan, or whomever is being dusted off to raise funds? Because they raise a lot of money from people that should be, you know, ponying up some money to make changes in the world, because they think they're doing that by funding them.
Yeah, they do. And they, especially when a Republican gets elected, I think all these liberal groups, all make a fortune. So yes, you're absolutely right. They are, they turn everyone into a dupe. And it's very, very unfortunate, because they give credibility for some of the most inhumane acts in the world. As long as the U.S. government is killing people, it's okay. And they always come up with a justification, demonize someone, say they're a tyrant, and people dutifully follow along. That someone is, and that's why you have to lie, because I think the instinct is not to be in favor, for most people, is to be against war, to be against intervention. So in order to get people to buy in, you have to create an evil other, and that's where they come in. And so even when the game is up in Syria, or close to being up, there's still a chance to thwart Syria, still a chance to thwart Russia, so let's trot out Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International at the 11th hour and see how they can muddy the waters and help make the case for continuing to destroy this country.
And finally, you mentioned in closing that, what you just discussed about Syria. Enter Amnesty and HRW to help make sure that if the Trump administration participates, it won't make any changes they need worry about. You said before that they oppose Trump, but you're actually, I think the word depose is more appropriate for what's been underway lately. And I'm wondering what role these guys might end up playing in that if Trump actually starts to make sense in Syria and sits down with the Russians and the Iranians and the Syrians and, helps them work something out that, will relieve the suffering.
Yeah, well, it's interesting with Trump. There's so much contradiction with him. Trump is not the peace candidate, not at all. He's, on the one hand, he says no regime change. On the other hand, he'll say, let's grab the oil. But he's been consistent about some things that I think anti-war people can agree with. But now they're... is a very interesting moment. Flynn had to ultimately resign because he talked to a Russian official. But this, we keep being told this never happens. This happens all the time. In 2008, Obama sent McFaul, who was ultimately his ambassador to Moscow, to talk to the Russians before he had been inaugurated. It goes back to Nixon being in touch with the South Vietnamese, telling them not to work for Humphrey, or Reagan interfering with the Carter administration, getting hostages out of Iraq. This is not a new story, and it's something that happens every time there's a transition. There's some sort of outreach to a foreign government. Flynn is not a good guy, not a nice guy. He was one of the people who was screaming for war against Iran, but it is not true that he did something so terrible and something that was so an anomaly, to talk to the Russians about sanctions or about anything. But the phone call was recorded, and he was going to be potentially caught in a lie, so he was he had to go. But it's the kind of thing we can expect with people like John McCain, who hates Trump, who always did hate Trump, and the Democrats, who are using Trump to cover their own failings and the fact that they have lost everything. And unfortunately, Democrats have been very passive and are gladly clinging to these anti-Russian stories in order to believe that their party is worth keeping. So it's all connected. The effort to undermine any peace in Syria, the effort to undermine any change in foreign policy is all connected, and that's where these organizations come in.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.